All right, we have taken our places. Good morning and welcome to the Roundtable. I'm Joe Donahue. It's the Roundtable on the Roundtable, and we have a wonderful panel before us. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here.
Hello, hello. How do you smell Shumagegi?
Your spelling may vary. Yes. our good friend Ray Graff is here. Good morning, Ray.
Hello.
Thank you for taking the reins while I was away for a few days. I appreciate it.
It was fun.
Thank you very much. Also, the man behind the Columbia Paper and the news website, ColumbiaPaper.com, joins us, Perry Teasdale. It is wonderful to have you not only with us, but on the, you know, not on the phone, but right here in the studio.
Well, you don't know yet whether it's wonderful
or not.
That's
a good point. We'll find out in 40 minutes.
But I've always wanted to know whether Perry is, and Perry Teasdale, that from the moment they named you Perry, that you were going to be a newspaper man because of, you know, Perry White.
Don't call me Chief.
Great Caesar's ghost.
Great Caesar's
Where's Olson? Get me Olson. I want
a picture. Is there a spelling difference? Because one's Perry, P-A-R-Y.
Yeah, I think Perry White was a P-E-R. Yeah, I'm P-A.
Well,
excellent.
Details.
Yeah. And how does Schmigegi differ from Schlemiel?
Oh, yeah.
Now you've done it, Mary. Well, check, please. We're done.
Perry, let us begin with you and some stories that are making news in your neck of the woods. What have we got on the docket?
This is the time of year. It's actually election time.
Did you know that
this spring?
Yes.
Yeah, we just had village elections, and we're headed towards school board elections and school district elections. And we had a couple of changes that went on in villages. Of the four villages, two had some significant changes. And in one, in Valencia, there was a last-minute meeting that was considered a little bit out of the ordinary because it was 8:30 in the morning on a Saturday, and it was just hours before the new board was sworn in. So that raised some eyebrows, and there were some changes made and some appointments made, and it's not clear exactly what the import of those will be long term, but it certainly is one of those things where you get to this, you can't get any more roots and grassroots than village government. I mean, it's your neighbors governing you, and you can see what they're doing every day. So there's a whole feeling of participation, whether you want it or not.
And so this goes on in a lot of places other than Columbia County.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I'm guaranteeing you it goes on in Amherst and in Northwest Connecticut and the rest.
With the human animals that we are, this is the way it will often happen.
And, this is replicated in plenty of places. And in lots of places, the transitions are smooth. And you also see in place like Chatham, where they're now turning their attention to the budget, and they're cutting municipal services. In this case, police, which is a very controversial cut, but it's also where the money is. That's where the money's going. Yeah. And if you don't have any money to raise and you can't raise taxes because people just don't have the money, then what do you do? And that's the dilemma that towns and villages, but especially now villages, which are confronting their annual budget at this point. And then you turn that right around and look at the schools. And this, what the schools are looking at doing is not only cutbacks in some cases, although they've managed in some cases not to have the staff cutbacks anymore because they've already had those. Now they're closing buildings. And that's a very emotional thing for communities.
Oh, yeah.
And you've seen it. We've seen it happen in actually with relatively smooth transition in the village of Kinderhook, in town of Kinderhook, and the district there is the Ichabod Crane school district. And then now we're getting into it in Chatham and some other places are looking at it. They've got to close buildings. These are wonderful old buildings. People love them. They have lots of memories attached to them. And they're very expensive to maintain. Mm-hmm. What do you do?
Well, you know, we've gone through it in Western Massachusetts and Great Barrington.
Sure.
Some beautiful old buildings have been extincted.
Extincted.
Yeah. And you ride by them, and they're doing some wonderful things with some of them. Some of them in the north of Great Barrington are being made, I believe, into apartments for people who really need them, and condominiums. And, the pain is somewhat. But you know what? As people die out, as people get older, the pain lessens.
Well, you're looking at long-term trends, and when you see enrollment is dropping. We live in the Northeast. The population is not growing that fast. In some places, it's shrinking. Columbia County is one of the oldest counties in the United States, in the state of New York. And so there's a pressure to close schools because the kids certainly aren't in the pipeline.
Oh, that's an interesting point. You know that in Great Barrington, we've been talking about combining the Great Barrington schools and the Southern Berkshire schools,
sure.
Sheffield, and these two gigantic schools, both built beautiful buildings, is trying to build yet another building in Great Barrington. There are fewer kids in both districts now that would be in a high school than there were when we got there in Monument Mountain High School. So, you know, you think that they'd get off their behinds and do what they had to do, but, you know, geopolitics being what they are, people say, oh, well, you know, we can't have that happen to our school.
Well, a school also is part of the identity of a community. Yep. And so when communities are asked to give up something that are community centers, and there are precious few community centers,
right.
Then you're asking people to do something more than simply save money. You're asking them to change the way they think about where they live. And that's a big change for people.
It is. But on the other hand, they're not happy about what they're paying in taxes. And I got to say, again, going back to my hometown, which has not done this yet, in Great Barrington, we spent millions of dollars on our library. But the library closes too early. Libraries, and most librarians will tell you this now, should be community centers for young people. You can have a change in the axis of where the action, is just by sort of talking about the various institutions and who does what.
Well, get me started on libraries, and we'll be on a different topic from the ones that are scheduled for this week. But libraries also, they're being repurposed as well,
sure.
As community centers, as well as resources for books and other materials. And obviously, those other materials have become exceedingly important. And then I asked the Commissioner of Education, Rick Mills, a few years ago, I said, hey, what happens when we have a whole new situation where actually we need less space for libraries than we used to,
sure.
Instead of more space?
Right.
And that's part of the function of when you're handing out nooks or where people are simply downloading, then what is the purpose of a library? Well, the library certainly has an important and essential community function, but it isn't going to be the same. And people are going to have to adjust to that, just like they're going to have to adjust to fewer schools.
Yeah, but, I've said it too many times, but every afternoon after school, I would go to a library, the Donnell Library in New York, which
yes,
is no,
I know
longer,
it well.
No longer there. Yeah, and I would be there till 10 o'clock at night.
Right.
And so would an awful lot of other young people who were doing their studying, their homework, and a bit of socializing, to be perfectly honest.
librarians can tell you where the best socializing shelves
yeah,
are.
So
you know, they
really
say the back there
stacks.
In the social.
I love what you said, the word, Perry, which is repurposing. I think that's what it's about.
Let me ask you a question. You know, when and this is for both Alan and for Perry, but I'll let Alan take a crack at it first because I see a lot of the letters that come to Alan of people asking questions about these very issues about taxation and, you know, okay, what about, you know, the federal government's doing this? They throw it down to the states throw it through the counties throw it to the towns and villages, and then you get this fight. And Alan does this thing every once in a while when he's talking about ownership, where you know he takes the points to the right and points to the left and says, who's in charge? And you get that sense. I see that in the letters that you
sure.
get of people say, all right, but where does the buck stop? If I'm gonna do I pay for my schools and my federal taxes? Do I pay for my schools and my local taxes, or am I getting, quite frankly, screwed by everybody?
And what happens is, it's unfortunate.
That last option, I think.
Yeah, right.
Is that what you're going to take?
Yeah.
Well, Ray has five children in the school system,
yes.
Right, Ray?
Well, not yet.
But soon.
Yeah.
Couple
of years.
There will be a point where you will have five children within the system.
Yes.
And I say God bless them. I mean, that's why, that's American. We had two. The Berkshire Hills Regional School District did wonderful, and the Southern Berkshire for a little while, did wonderful job with our children. But there are people who after, and Perry will know this too from what the letters he gets, that after the kids, their kids get out, there are really people who say, close the door, pull down the hatch. We don't want to have, we're spending too much money on our schools, which they didn't say when the kids were in the schools.
Well, I think, Joe, to go back to your point, there's a word that Alan will remember, and maybe you guys will too, devolution.
Yeah.
And that was something that came up really in the Reagan years, in the early 80s. And that was the concept that you would push all decision-making and all responsibility down to the lowest level of government.
Right.
And
trickle
theoretically,
down,
well, that was trickle-down was the economic side of it, but devolution was the side that said, okay, it's all going to go in this, it's all going to go down. Too much is at the federal level,
right.
and too little has been left to the local. And the other part of it that worked very well, dovetailed with it, was starve the beast. In other words, don't have the federal government have any money to spend. And now we're seeing that played out in a real way. And we're saying, okay, you have loads of responsibility now, and there's no money for it. And so the money that we use to fund schools in this state, in New York State, as opposed to some other states is slightly different, is the property tax, which is an extremely unfair tax in many ways. Mm. And so you end up with a double whammy. First, you're not getting the same support from either the state or the federal government. The federal government doesn't do too much directly with schools, but it does through the states do a lot. And so you're seeing that that all of this is being devolved down to the town level, or
right.
school district level in this case. And yet there's nothing to back it up. There's no help. There's no transition, or very little. And that's the difficulty. And you're saying, okay, and at the same time, we're layering on all these levels of responsibility in the form of standards. And standards, we all want higher standards, but they cost money. And then on top of that, there's the whole concept of how do you measure standards? Well, you measure standards with tests, and you measure them now with standardized tests. And the New York Times had a front page story last week about using computers essay tests.
Yeah.
Isn't that's exciting? And maybe there's an algorithm that can tell us what students are the smartest and are the most creative. But I'm a little worried about that part of it. And I think also the issue of these tests is great. But you know what they're also calling for in the state and the schools are facing is they now all have to be taken on computer. Well, that makes sense. Who pays for the computer?
Right.
Guess what? The property tax is going to pay for a lot of the computer. Not all of it, but some of it. So it's all being pressed down. And then the upper levels can say, look what we've done, the state and the federal government. Look what we've done. We're spending less money. Well, but yeah, and you're demanding more. And then it gets into this whole argument in this state anyway of unfunded mandates. And the arguments go on, but the paying the bill is being foisted more and more down on the local taxpayer and the local property tax base.
And let me just pause you there for a moment when you talk about unfunded.
Pause me?
Unfunded. If you're a computer, I'm just going to press the pause button and those two little lines will light up. But, you know, look, we have four people in this room who have, obviously a variance in age. However, we've all been doing this for a long time and been covering these stories. And for as long as I can remember, and I'm sure for as long as the two of you can remember.
I can't remember anything.
Well, no, in this you will. Trust me, Alan. I'm setting you up for this for nothing but success here. We've been talking about this forever.
Yeah.
About unfunded, that you they're throwing it down here and they don't have the money and we can't afford it. And what I'm getting at is what do we do to address that? Because as we go through an economic cycle, as we go through the cyclicality, is that a word?
That's the word now.
Cyclicality?
I don't know. Working on pause. That's
Boy,
a problem.
Okay.
Well, when we go through the cycle, the cyclical nature of the economy, that sounds better. I'm going to go with that. That we also have to deal with, who's paying for what, and we have the services that we want, and we don't want to feel like we're losing anything. And so what do we do? And I guess what I'm asking you in a very long way is, do you ever see a point where this won't be an issue, where we get our act together and we can say, okay, this is what has to happen, because there's a formula that is not one size fits all, but it's a formula that works for this particular community?
I hope not, because really we're talking about the future. And to pretend that we know what's in the future is a dangerous proposition too. So I think that there's always going to be a debate.
But planning.
Planning is, planning.
But it's politics. Perry and Joe, I have to tell you that in every town, there's a blue meanie. There's somebody who sits there and says, damn them. You know, they're taking my money and my taxes to throwing it at those kids. They're playing soccer and they're playing football and they've got a swimming pool in some places. And that's too much. These kids are being spoiled. And there will I don't like those people. You can tell from my voice. But that's always going to happen in every town, no matter how little is being spent. And then there'll be a taxpayers association. And then there'll be somebody who yells and screams. And then the good people of the town will come together to support education. Oh, yeah.
May I? Of course you may. A moment. No, throwing money at things doesn't always equate to great success. In other words, you can throw piles of money at a school, but if it's not efficiently spent, then it's wasting money. So the blue meanie, as you call him, perhaps is over
the line.
What color
shirt do you have on there?
It's blue.
Oh, okay.
But I agree largely with you. But I think that there is also a happy medium there where you say, well, you know what? You can't keep, I mean, look at some of the numbers in New York and other states where there's a lot of spending, but not necessarily a lot of evidence of big success. In other words, are you spending the money right? Maybe you can cut costs. You know, homeowners only have so much to give, and that's the bottom line.
We're going to take a quick break and continue the conversation. We'll let Alan formulate his response, and then we'll be right back. You're listening to The Roundtable on The Roundtable on WAMC. Welcome back to The Roundtable on The Roundtable. Alan Chartok is here, Ray Graff is here, and Perry Teasdale, the man from the Columbia paper, columbiapaper.com, joins us as well, and it's a pleasure to have him in our studio and talking to us this morning. We have a few moments before we go to an NPR news update, and anything you want to say regarding what Ray just mentioned?
No, I think he's right. I think there is a tension that is necessary, and I think Perry said the same thing, that there is a tension that is necessary in our politics. There are times when school administrators make too much money. They got a ton of money, and we have too many of them, you know? So those are the things that people have to argue. Look, Andrew Cuomo has argued it. His father, Mario, argued it, that there's savings to be made by combining districts, by combining services. We have too many local governments. And as Perry said before, you know, people will say, no, that's my government. But Ray's right. There comes a point when it's just too much, and you got to say no. But there are also the blue meanies who will always yell that everything is too much.
Yeah, but it's not always blue meanies. One of the things you have to look at is that there's a kind of public tension between what people want for their kids and what they believe should, where the resources should go. And that's just part of the democratic process. We, in the Ichabod Crane district, for instance, in the Kinderhook area, there were a group of people who wanted to have football. And the school district allowed them to start a football program or restart it after years of not having it by funding it privately. And now they want it put in the budget. There's a new superintendent. He's saying, we'll put it in the budget. But people rejected a budget last year that had football in it, funding. So that goes back and forth, and you say, okay, we love football, but can we afford it? And those kinds of things. And that's the kind of give and take that is good for a school district. The problem is that if the basic resources aren't there for basic aid, then you have a problem of delivering those things that are the essential functions of school to the kids. And that's dangerous to our society and to our democracy.
Sure. And there's always some sense of gamesmanship in all of this.
Absolutely.
You know, this business of we're building a road. Oh, well, you know, can the town plow the road? Can the town take the road? Can the town, you know, I mean, we know this stuff goes on, and it happens all the time. And people know very well what the step 2 and 3 and 4, you know, are going to be.
We would love, of course, to hear from you. You can email us, roundtable@wamc.org. You can also comment on our webpage or Facebook page, or tweet us at wamcroundtable.org. We'll be back with Ray and Alan and Perry and your thoughts as well. We'd love to hear from you through one of those social media options. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. On the Roundtable, I'm Joe Donahue. Ray Graff is here. Perry Teasdale is here from ColumbiaPaper.com, ColumbiaPaper.com. And there's an actual paper as well. It's not just online.
Indeed, there is.
Beautiful printed paper. And you can check that out as well. Pick up a copy. Ray, he holds it in his hand, for goodness sakes. It's a wonderful radio prop right there.
They're all over the place.
And Dr. Alan Chartok is in the studio as well.
So, and by the way, the Columbia paper is a wonderful paper. It is. And I have to tell you, they do carry my column, and maybe somebody would say that this is somewhat self-serving. You would. I was admitting it. And you would go,
No,
you
no,
know,
it's great.
I mean, think I don't know what you're
day
up
is
to.
It, what day are you on?
It's on Thursday.
That's the day when it's the best, obviously. Right?
Well, no, it's just different.
So it's a weekly. So
yeah,
it's
I was going to say it's a
the,
weekly paper.
It's one of the 7 days. It's really good, yeah.
Okay.
Okay, then.
Then you look at the... we were talking about states, we've been talking about taxes, we've been talking about some of society's problems, and I came across this article and I thought it was interesting, which is that some states and counties are studying whether to tax gun and ammunition purchases, supporters hoping to discourage gun violence and also use the money to pay for damage that violence causes. Cook County, Illinois, this month began collecting a $25 tax on gun purchases, and at least six states are considering new taxes on firearms or ammunition as a way to help pay for the consequences of gun violence. And I think it's an interesting issue because we tax cigarettes, we tax other things that are heavily taxed, gasoline, of course, that are A, used, and B, not with gasoline, but certainly with cigarettes, that are used to discourage. Is that something that works? And is this a way of getting around tough gun laws and saying, okay, but if you are going to, all right, we can't pass this in our particular state, but what we can do is make sure that if you are going to get one of these guns, that it's going to cost you a lot more.
I'm all for it. I think it's a great idea, and I think all of the reasons that you've just outlined are particularly good. It is a regressive tax, however. All sales taxes are a regressive tax. The most progressive tax, of course, comes in the income tax, and just try to raise that and see what happens. So you can get away with these things. I'm all for it, and I know that it will cause consternation. Now, I can see, you know, the Supreme Court at one point very early said, the power to tax is the power to destroy. And, of course, that's true. Now, we know that this particular Supreme Court, the gang that is there, if that's the term one would want to use, that I do, will defend the Second Amendment.
Gang, esteemed body. That's interchangeable.
Yeah, gang is one.
Yeah.
And esteemed body, as you say.
Did you say steamed body?
Yeah.
Steamed, yeah, right.
No, that's the... Well, no.
So I can see somebody bringing this to the Supreme Court and saying the power to tax is the power to destroy. It's, you know, there's the Second Amendment and all the rest. But frankly, I think it's a great idea. I think they ought to do it in the same way they've done so many other things.
Lawrence Keene, General Counsel of the National Shooting Sports Foundation, says such taxes do not create safer communities. They burden and frustrate the exercise of a constitutional right.
Sure.
Yeah, but let's just take one step back and say there's a problem with taxes in general in the sense that right now we have a country that isn't very welcoming to new taxes. And if you have a regressive tax in particular, it seems to me a little bit of a distraction in terms of the goal, which is to try to make it less easy for people who are intent on doing violence and harm to get guns or to get the type of guns that can do that kind of harm. So that it may be a distraction because on the local level it may work where you have that majority of people in government like Cook County, and I guess it's outside the city of Chicago, where they're making that tax possible. And other places we've seen just the opposite happen, where it's become easier to get guns and whether it's or easier to get firearms and easier to get ammunition, and there are laws against doing that kind of thing. So you won't have it there. So it'll become a patchwork quilt, and it may be an effort that's worth trying, but again, it's throwing it back to the local community and not saying, hey, this is a national problem, and if you're trying to solve it with taxes as a social tool to amend behavior or change behavior, that may be laudable, but it's only going to work again if it's national. It's not going to happen nationally.
But Perry, yes, you're right. It's not going to happen. You got Republican control of the House of Representatives, and they're never going to let that particular thing happen. Nevertheless, you have to do something, and you have to try. You know, I'm all for states passing strict gun laws. I think it's great what Connecticut did. I think it's great what Andrew Cuomo and the New York legislature did. I mean, I think that what happens is it sets an example of what everybody, you know, ought to be doing. It raises consciousness. And I think that's terrific. So that, therefore, I'm for it. Nevertheless, is it perfect? No. You know, the people down in North Carolina, wherever, are going to have to, in Alabama, Mississippi, they're going to have to deal with it themselves as more and more we look at what the effect of not having those laws in particular areas are.
And I wonder, whether the taxation is the right approach from government or something closer to what we do with automobiles and say you have to have insurance. If you're going to have a car, you have to have insurance.
All for it.
And then if you're going to have a firearm that can kill people, then there are levels of insurance. So if you have a small red sports car, you pay a higher tax rate, not higher insurance,
higher insurance rate,
as far as I'm told. I don't know if that's true.
Is that right?
That's maybe an urban myth, so I want to be very careful about it. I've heard that, but I have no source to say.
Red's got this huge black Cadillac.
Yeah, but that's different than us.
Well, but that could kill somebody if he hits somebody with it hard.
Yeah, but the question is
he's
safer in it.
I'm
so,
very safe.
Yeah. So who knows? But there are differences in terms of what safety equipment you have, whether you're locking up your guns or those kinds of things. So maybe insurance is another way to go. But I still think that there are issues as well, and you know, about registration, where the emphasis has to be placed, even if they're defeated in this Congress, because if 90% of the people in the country are in favor of, and that's what the latest, I guess it's the CBS News poll saying.
In favor of
registration, yeah. of background checks,
yeah.
Then we ought to be making sure that we get that as well. And that some of this, it doesn't matter that they can both happen perhaps, but where do you want to put the emphasis?
I was going to say that. This really is not an either or.
No.
I'm for everything you can load on.
Yeah, you know, and yeah, load is the word. Let's. I want to make 2 points. One is just to clarify what we're talking about as far as the states. Many states are looking at this, obviously, and the proposals are all over the place. And I just want to give you an idea. There's legislation pending in New Jersey and in Washington, of course, in Chicago, as I mentioned. In California, there is a bill that would add a 5-cent tax to the sale of every bullet. A hearing is set for that on April 15th.
Joe, can I interrupt? You remember the Chris Rock routine?
Yes.
Where he talks about guns should be cheap, but bullets should cost $5,000.
Yeah.
And then he goes on to say, I'm going to kill that guy as soon as I can afford to get the bullet to kill him.
You know, it's the approach that the razor blades have. They should give you the
razor. They give you the razor.
They give you the razor because the razor blades are so,
expensive,
you know.
Right?
Expensive,
right.
Yeah. I was looking for the right adjective.
Which is my problem, because I actually thought of that routine and I thought about playing it, but playing Chris Rock on the radio,
yeah.
I realize you can't do that.
No.
Even if it's
too much of a certain letter.
Here's another one. Nevada would create. They have a proposal with a bill that would create a $25 tax for gun sales and a 2-cent tax on each round of ammunition. Each round. Massachusetts. David Linsky, a Democrat, proposed a 25% sales tax on ammunition and firearms, with the money going to mental health and victims programs, police training, and firearms licensing, saying we tax cigarettes, we tax alcohol, we tax other items that have a negative effect on society. Why should we stop at guns and ammunition? The other point I wanted to make is, and I don't know if any of you have, if any of you saw it, and if I thought it was one of the most affecting things that I've seen on television in a long time, but 60 Minutes did a piece last night with the parents of the children whose children died at Newtown, and it was singularly one of the most wrenching things I've ever seen.
So courageous for those parents to do that.
Absolutely, and what it shows is to me. What it showed was a in many senses, and obviously there was a whole group of parents there, I would say maybe 20 or so, and you're seeing a transition from a grieving parent to a grieving parent who is now becoming an activist. And they are starting to speak out, and they're starting, and one of the women who was interviewed said, I realize that I'm starting to find my voice, and one of the things that gets me through the day is to speak and to talk about this and what has happened. And I wonder, as Scott Pelley pointed out in this piece, that as we have this national debate, and many say that as we get farther and farther away from Newtown, that we don't become as connected with what happened. Well, last night, I mean, that certainly seems to me that it brought a lot of people back to that moment and what it was like. Because, as you so often have said, Alan, I mean, you're not going to – people can relate with the fact of what something can happen to your child.
Yeah, yeah. I think every one of us who has a child, every one of us who has a nephew, every one of us who has a niece can understand that it's almost unfathomable. What the pain is when that kind of thing happens. You know, James Brady?
Yes.
You know, when
press secretary for Ronald Reagan.
For the right-wing Ronald Reagan, started one of the most effective gun control movements in the country. And it didn't go anywhere, really. I mean, but he set the stage for it. And again, it's always, you never know what you're going to do until it happens to you. So here is the right-wing president. We see the gun control angst in the House of Representatives. They don't want anything to do with it. I was going to ask Parry something else since he's, the Columbia County paper and all. We know that as we get further upstate, the need to have guns is so much greater, and to protect the individual from having that gun. We see associations of sheriffs knowing where their electorate is, standing up and yelling and screaming that we can't have Andrew Cuomo's SAFE Act. Parry, can you help us with what's with all of the gun stuff upstate?
Well, I don't think I'm qualified to speak all
around
upstate. Well,
you're the editor of the paper.
But I think that we've seen that movement take hold at the town level and the county level. And you've seen the activists who are very, very concerned. They will go in front of in our case, the County Board of Supervisors. Which is the legislative body of the county. And they did make their case. And they won because there's a weighted vote, and the weighted vote favors, and it's mostly along party lines, although not exclusively, by any means, not exclusively. Republicans are in favor of repealing the SAFE Act. This was all about the SAFE Act. And they went and they organized to the various municipalities, and they've tried to get them, and in some cases the municipalities have agreed, in other cases they haven't, and I think that it's a very well organized effort, and my suspicion is, suspicion is the wrong word, because what they're doing is entirely legal and entirely within the scope of the democratic process. But my belief is that they may be getting some outside help. Certainly, they're getting some guidance in terms of how to do this. There's nothing wrong with that. Mm. And they are an interest group, and they have organized because they feel their interests are threatened. And I think it remains to be seen whether people who have different views will mobilize, and whether there'll be any force to bring them together. In other words, you're talking about an emotional reaction to something on television, and certainly to Newtown and the massacre that it wasn't just on television. This happened, and you're right, Alan. It's a visceral reaction. I think maybe everybody is affected by that, but you see different ways of addressing the problem. To make it not happen again, or to make it less likely that it happens. And yet you see continuing gun violence, not with assault weapons necessarily, but in domestic cases, and we don't have a lot of gun violence in in robberies and things like that. You know, crime is not the biggest problem in small rural communities, violent crime, except often in domestic cases, and occasionally guns do play a role in that.
Well, so, I'll never forget Wiley Gates and the
and the
Chatham thing, right, which became the story of the century up there. Still, everybody,
it's still something that people who were around at that time. And
but
and
I asked you a different question, sir, and you didn't answer.
Oh, I'm sorry. Let me try.
What is it about upstate that makes
it
so?
Well, first of all, there's a way. If you grow up in the country, you are very likely to have experienced and had a good experience with firearms. Because if you, especially in a rural and agricultural community like Columbia County, you had firearms to get rid of varmints, and there really were varmints.
Yeah, sure.
And there were rabid varmints sometimes, and there were varmints that were, even if it was just that they were killing your chickens or other livestock. And that's a big problem. And guns are an efficient and humane way often of doing that. And there's also hunting, which is a sport, and people do hunt. And people who haven't hunted or feel differently about deer or who haven't had a deer run into their car and damage it may feel differently about hunting. But hunting is part of the culture there.
Sure.
So people... Guns are not considered an outside element. Guns are part of what was in the garage or in the house, like cars, like phones, like other appurtenances of life. So if you're saying you can't have a certain type of guns, that gets their attention. It's basically like saying you can't have a certain type of cell phone.
Well, nobody said they couldn't have a shotgun. Andrew Cuomo came out with his Remington and said,
That argument has been co-opted by the NRA and by other organizations that have said any attack on any gun, any firearm, is an attack on all firearms.
Yeah.
And that any registration is a precursor to rounding up all the guns and confiscating them. Now, nobody's rounded up all the cars and confiscated them, and we have that. And there's no precedent for that, but they will tell you that's going to happen. It seems to me that that's paranoid.
If
they believe it. Well, let's assume that, let's give them the benefit of the doubt on the local level.
Yeah.
I don't think these people are motivated by working for the gun industry who go to these local meetings. Mm-hmm. I really don't. Okay. They may have been receiving guidance. They may have been
propaganda
and help in
a robocall
or something from the gun industry or its supporters or its lobbyists. But I don't have any evidence of that, and I want to be very clear.
So, if you were Andrew Cuomo, who seems to have, I mean, there was one little thing that he did to change the magazines. You know,
right,
how many bullets you could have in a magazine. Would you back up or would you stick with it? If you were him, got it.
I got it.
It seems to me that's...
Well, you're putting people on an honor system, rounds in a 10-round magazine.
Yeah.
And you're going to make somebody a crime who puts 8 rounds in there? There's something about it. I think you can say there's a period over which you've got to make a transition from this amount of bullets. And I don't know why 7 is safer than 10, except... In reality, maybe that's 3 people who wouldn't be killed. You could kill with one. So I don't know. I think that there are adjustments that can be made, and I think certainly the mental health adjustments and those kinds of things. There, any law, you can revisit it. The problem is, he knows as well as everybody else that once you reopen it, it can be a Pandora's box, and lots of things can then come up for debate. And what he wanted to do, obviously, by sending a message of necessity, was to say, "Hey, we're not going to sidetrack this with debate and with parliamentary procedures. We're going to push it through because it's legal to do that, and we want an up and down vote." And the state gave him an up vote. And so he doesn't want to revisit that up vote. But there, I would say looking for ways and discussing ways of revising those portions of the law that don't make sense as a practical matter or that are really defy how we should be behaving with people who have mental illness and people who treat folks with mental illness, those are things that need to be addressed. And I don't think they should wait too long.
We're going to take a quick break and wrap up when we come back. You're listening to The Roundtable on The Roundtable. Perry Teasdale is with us. He is from the Columbia Paper, columbiapaper.com. Ray Graff is with us and Alan Chartok as well. We welcome your input, roundtable at WAMC.org. We will return after the short break. Wish I could whistle like that. I can't do that.
Don't you know how to whistle, Joe?
Sorry. Not well enough. Anyone can whistle. Sarah LeDuc joins us for on the roundtable, to give us an idea of what has been on your mind for both this show and past shows. What are people saying, Sarah?
These are all from this show and all via email. Emails to roundtable@wamc.org. Lisa wrote in and said, great conversation on school taxes. We need to talk more about this. The problem with these large taxes is that they keep increasing, and it gets to the point that you have to relocate once you can no longer afford them. I don't think labeling someone as mean because they can no longer afford or stay to retire in their homes is a way to address the reality of what's happening. So people aren't leaving just because they decided they hate a place.
Yeah, no, she was saying Alan was wrong to say blue meanies.
Oh.
That's what she was saying.
Yeah. Okay.
She was saying.
Yeah. She didn't color code it.
You didn't ask him what color shirt he was wearing.
No.
Black.
Joe from Woodstock wrote in and said, let's get real about school taxes and school closings. We've known for decades about the baby boom, and therefore it should have been obvious that school closings were coming down the pike. Less babies equals less school children. It's not rocket science, folks. And Anne wrote in and said, as to the comment on today's program that we're all screwed, no. In the New York State's poor economy, as the majority districts are screwed. It's hard to believe that public education
Let me stop you there. I asked that as a question, not as a declaration, go ahead.
Sure. She says, it's hard to believe that public education can be an equalizer for children living in poverty when New York State has no interest in helping our most vulnerable children.
Thank you very much. And how can people get involved?
Oh, almost any way they can imagine. Carrier pigeon, smoke signals, email, roundtable@wmc.org, Twitter, Facebook, and our website.
Semaphore.
And for us all, older people who have now finally gotten emails straight, emails is one easy way to do it.
Sure.
And where do you write?
roundtable@wamc.org.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Sarah LeDuc is our producer, and we thank her for coming in. Any final thoughts as we look at 2 minutes left in the show about what we discussed this morning and what we just heard from the comments from our listeners?
I hope the guy in North Korea isn't crazy.
All right, we'll talk about that tomorrow.
Yeah,
we'll talk about North Korea tomorrow and a lot going on.
If he's crazy, we may all be screwed.
Nah. Don't worry. It's all going to be okay.
Thanks, Ray.
Well, I think when you talk about it, you talk about the countries around it, too, because I was talking to somebody who lives in Japan, and she was talking about how we can't know here how they feel about it in Japan.
Sure.
They're really concerned.
Because
they're right in the firing line.
Sure.
So it's a lot more.
Sure.
A lot more discussion to take place on that subject. Obviously, we'll all be watching the situation very closely over the next few days and see if another "quote unquote test" is in the works and how we respond to that.
So. And you can go to wamc.org to see us sitting around here, see what the color of our shirts are, see if Alan is sticking his eyeglasses in his ear,
which you just
and
did.
Like that, yeah. I wanted
offensively to, so.
Right,
I might add.
Thank you for sharing.
Yes. Yeah.
And on that note, we thank you very much for joining us this morning. And a special thanks to Perry Teasdale. A delight to have you here, sir.
Yeah,
thank you very much.
Great.
Hopefully, you'll be back.
Yeah.
Non-committal.
Is the jury still out?
No, we
can talk you into it, right? Excellent.
Yes,
all right. Ray, Alan, thank you very much. Coming up, the show continues. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.